Good morning to each one, and greetings in Jesus' name. Truly, we are a blessed people this morning, and we're reminded of that at this time of the year in a special way as we think about Thanksgiving and some of the events that surround that. But we know that our blessings don't start and stop with Thanksgiving, and we know that God has certainly been good to us. As we think about our blessings, we often list some of the things that we are thankful for, and that's good and right. I wonder how often we pause and bless the Lord, as the front of our bulletin said. I don't know if you read through the front of the bulletin or not, but the psalmist said, bless the Lord. And sometimes it's easy to go through the list of blessings and name them and think about them, but have we paused and have we blessed the Lord? He says, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. And then he lists quite a number of them, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. So many blessings. Have we stopped and blessed? Have we paused and blessed the Lord? You can open your Bibles to Luke chapter 17 for the sermon today. I hope that as we, or I intend that we have some time at the end that gives you time to share. You know, sometimes we tend to preach too long and doesn't give you a lot of opportunity, but I'd like you to think about that as we go through the message this morning. And it can be an experience you had that you share with the congregation. It can be something that you're grateful or thankful for as we think about Thanksgiving, an opportunity to bless the Lord publicly. And so think about that as we go through the sermon. As I was pondering what to preach this morning, what to speak on, I thought about the story of the 10 lepers that Jesus healed. I was thinking a bit about being thankful and Thanksgiving, and the sermon isn't just on that. It went quite a bit broader, but the title that I gave the sermon is Life Lessons from the Lepers. Life Lessons from the Lepers. And the account is here in Luke 17, 11 to 19 is the verses, and I have, I think it's 9 different life lessons, so we're just going to go through them, hopefully quickly enough that it gives you some time to share at the end, but just a few lessons that I picked out of this account that are foundational for us to think about and learn and understand as we go through life. Again, some of them have to do with being thankful, of course, but not all of them. This morning, we're going to take the time just to read these verses here. Luke 17, beginning at verse 11. And it came to pass, as he went to Jerusalem, that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off. They lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, Go, show yourselves unto the priests. And it came to pass that as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, and with a loud voice glorified God, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answering said, Were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? There are not found that return to give glory to God, save this stranger. And he said unto him, Arise, go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. Now, this is a very familiar story. It's a story that the children have heard from little on up. And it's a common story. We know what happened. Jesus healed these lepers. There was 10 of them. As they went to the priest, they were healed. And there was one that took the time to come back and thank Jesus for what he had done. And the rest, well, we don't know what happened to them. But Jesus commended this man for his gratitude. As we look at this account, some of these lessons just have to do with life in general and men in general, but we can pull it out of this account. So the first life lesson that I have, number one, is we have a problem. We have a problem. In this account, 10 out of the 10 men had a problem. In this group, 100% of them had a problem. They all had leprosy. Today, we all have a problem as well. In April of 1970, the Apollo 13 mission was in space with the intention of landing on the moon. During the mission, an explosion occurred in one of the spacecraft's oxygen tanks, jeopardizing the safety of the three astronauts on board. The crew faced a critical in-flight emergency. They contacted Mission Control in Houston, and from that, the phrase, "Houston, we have a problem," has become famous. Houston, we have a problem. There were three men in space with a serious problem, and their lives depended upon the outcome. Here in this account, we have 10 men with leprosy. What was going to happen with their life? They had a problem. Well, we all have a problem. Romans chapter 3, I'm going to talk a little bit about our problem. And Romans chapter 3, there are a few verses that talk about this and how inclusive it is of all mankind. Romans chapter 3, beginning at verse 10. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way, they are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. There is none of us that is good, not one of us. We all have a problem. We are all like the men that had leprosy. We are all like men on a spaceship in space with a problem. There is none righteous, no, not one. You drop down to Romans chapter 5, a couple chapters later, verse 12. It says, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." So there we have it. Death by sin. All men have the sin problem. It's passed on to us. It began with Adam and his choices and the fall. But all mankind from there away was born with a sin nature. We all have a problem. We have all sinned. And beyond our problem of sin and the need for salvation, we also face problems in earth life. We are living on a sin-cursed earth. It is full of problems. As a result of the fall, there is sickness, there is sorrow, there is pain, there is death. There are spiritual problems, there are physical problems, there are emotional problems. Yeah, we have a lot of problems. But life isn't all problems. But we must recognize that all of us begin with the foundation that we all have a problem. Well, as we think about this problem a little bit further, life lesson number two is that sin alienates. Sin alienates. This problem of sin that we have, it alienates us. This problem of leprosy alienated these individuals. If you go back to Leviticus chapter 13, where God was giving Moses some instructions about how to deal with leprosy and those who experience leprosy, skin diseases. There's chapter 13 and 14, I believe, talk quite a bit about this. It was a big deal for the children of Israel and how they related to this. But in Leviticus 13, 45 and 46, it says this, "And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent, and his head bare, and he shall put a covering upon his upper lip, and shall cry, unclean, unclean. All the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be." He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be. Sin, leprosy alienated these men. It caused them to have to leave their families. They had to leave their homes. They had to leave their communities, their villages, and live away from others. It was alienating. They were alienated. And sin, in the same way, alienates us. Sin alienates us from God. Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12 says that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Now, if you were in the days of, well, in the Bible times, if you were a leper or if you had a skin disease, and you would be pushed out of your home and away from your community, just think of the distinction that would come along with that. You would be labeled. Yes, you would be labeled as a leper. Well, we have a few labels here that Paul writes. He says that this is what we were before. We were labeled as aliens. We were strangers. We didn't have any hope, and we were without God in the world. We were alienated from God. Sin is alienating. There are several aspects, different aspects to sin. It is a moral issue. It is a legal issue. And there are things that in particular that happen as we sin. But it also is alienating and it is enslaving. As we think about alienating or being an alien, I think of the word connection or disconnection. You know, we all endeavor, we all enjoy and desire connection. And Adam and Eve had that connection with God in the garden when he came to visit with them. And they connected with him. They communed with him. But then something happened and they sinned. And then there was a disconnection. And that's what sin brings into our lives. It brings disconnection from God. It also alienates us from others. There's this disconnection with others when sin is in our lives. And you can think of many stories throughout the Bible. I thought of Cain and Abel. This was not very far into man's experience, but there was this disconnection between Cain and Abel. And Cain rose up and killed his brother. It was because of sin and what sin had done in their lives. Joseph and his brothers. You think about how Joseph was treated by his brothers, how they handled him, how they treated him disrespectfully and disregarded his life and his well-being. There was a disconnection there. There should have been a connection where they loved their brother and where they took care of him. And you know, there were times when some of them did, and later on, of course, they changed and they repented. But it was because of sin that there was disconnection. He was healed by his faith. But what about the other men? What about the other men? Were they healed by their faith as well? Well, many times throughout the Jesus' life, when he healed people, he would often say, "Thy faith hath made thee whole," or "Thy faith has saved thee." There's another account, and we'll look at it a little bit later. But it clearly shows that people were healed by their faith or by their belief. Maybe we think often of faith as a saving faith, and that is a part of faith. But there's also the part of faith in just believing that, in this case, that Jesus could heal them. I believe that all 10 lepers were healed because of their faith. I do believe that they believed. There's also the account where Jesus came back to his own country, his own area, his home country it was, and he says that he could not do miracles and mighty deeds and mighty acts there because of their unbelief. And so a person's belief or a community's belief or unbelief had a lot to do with the ability of Jesus to perform miracles or not perform them. But what do you suppose would have happened if these men would have said, "I believe," when Jesus said, "Go show yourselves to the priest," but didn't start that journey, did not start walking, did not respond in obedience? Do you think they would have been healed? Well, I don't think they would have been, because if they wouldn't have started their journey, they would not have been obedient. And they would not have had expressed their faith. Jesus told them to go and show themselves to the priest. In the Old Testament, back in Leviticus, it explains how the priest was the one who would determine if a person was healed after they had a skin disease. And I would imagine these men would have liked if Jesus would have just looked at them and said, be healed, be restored to health. And it would have been that simple, and they would have looked, and their skin was taken care of. Whatever issue there was taken care of. And then they could have gone and shown themselves to the priest, and he could have cleared them as the custom was. But that wasn't the instructions that Jesus, it wasn't the way that Jesus performed the miracle. He told them to go and show themselves to the priest. And so it took obedience. They needed to obey. They needed to have faith that he could heal them, but they also needed to obey. And by their obedience, they could show that they had faith. And there's times in our lives that maybe we wish his solution or his answer would be different. Maybe something easier. Maybe something that's not so hard on my flesh. But it takes faith and it takes obedience. And James says, to show me your faith without your works or without your obedience, and I will show you my faith by my obedience. And so faith and obedience go hand in hand. The sixth life lesson that I have, this is a quote that I saw last week. It said, if we pause to think, we'll have cause to thank. Now, my last number of lessons here have to do with gratitude and thanksgiving, giving thanks. But if we pause to think, we'll have cause to thank. In this account, it says there is one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back. And I like to think about that little word a little bit. Those two words, turned back. So they were on their way to the priest to receive clearance that they were healed, and sure enough, healing took place. And he stopped, and he turned back. He interrupted his schedule. He interrupted the thing that he was going to do next because he realized that there was something that needed to be done first. But he paused to think. If we pause to think, we'll have cause to thank. How many times have I been too busy to give thanks? Or how many times have I been too busy that I've forgotten to give thanks? He didn't want to forget, so he went back and he did it right away. Deuteronomy 6, there's a couple of verses there, and Ryan referred to some in the beginning, in the opening, where it tells us to love the Lord thy God, and to serve him, and to love him with all of their heart. It was the admonition to the children of Israel. And then a few verses later, he says that as they prepared to conquer and conquest the land of Canaan, he says, when I give you good and great cities that you didn't build, and when I give you houses full of things that you didn't put in there, and when I give you wells that you didn't dig, and olive trees and vineyards that you didn't plant, he says, then beware lest thou forget the Lord. And you know, in a sense, these blessings that we have, many of them were handed to us. And the warning to us is then beware lest we forget the Lord. And I'm sure that the busyness of life causes us to forget sometimes. We need to take the time to pause. We need to take the time to turn back. Even if it is inconvenient, this man, instead of continuing on to the priest, he turned back and he came back to give thanks. How many times have I forgotten to pause, to stop, to thank God for the blessings that I have? Life lesson number 7. A heart filled with gratitude will be expressed in worship. This man returned and with a loud voice glorified God. He was not ashamed to express his worship, his thanksgiving. He glorified God with a loud voice. He didn't care who heard him. He didn't care what the other people thought. He was full of gratitude and he was ready to worship. Jesus had a very pointed question when he said, "Where are the nine?" And I take from that that he did not view whether they returned and gave thanks or not as optional. He expected that they all should have come back and given him thanks. They all should have come back and worshiped him. We don't know for sure what their thought process was. We only have recorded the experience of this one. And we can think that maybe they were grateful in their hearts, but they just didn't take the time to come back and verbally express it, express their thanks to Jesus. I don't know. That may have been the case. But Jesus doesn't seem to give them the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't seem to say, "Well, we know they're thankful, but they just didn't take the time to come back." He pointedly asks him, "Where are the nine?" Suggesting that they all should have come back. And suggesting that possibly their gratitude was not at the level that it should have been. What about our worship and our gratitude? Does my worship show that I am a grateful person this morning? Life lesson number 8. Sometimes those who receive the most are the least grateful. And I don't know who received the most in this. Well, I do know who received the most because Jesus tells us later on, but I don't know who had the most in this situation. I don't know how many of the other nine were what we would call true-blooded Jews. The one who returned was a Samaritan. He was part of a race that was despised by the Jews as half-breeds. That's how they thought about the Samaritans. In John chapter 4, where Jesus was talking to the woman at the well, she wondered how it was that him, being a Jew, was asking the Samaritan woman for a drink, because she was a woman of Samaria. She says, "For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." That's how they felt about each other. Jesus calls him a stranger here. We would probably say a foreigner. But he was the one that came back and gave thanks. And I tend to believe the others were, at least some of them, were probably Jews. Some of them, and when you think about all the blessings that God had given to them, I would guess that the Jews, the true-blooded Jews, were more blessed than the Samaritans. At least that's how they would have viewed it in their day. But who came back to give thanks? Sometimes gratitude is expressed by those of whom you least expect it. And that's probably a problem on our part. It's probably a bias on our part, on my part. Why would I not expect the Samaritan to come back and give thanks? I don't know. That's probably a problem on my part, a bias. But why did the others not come back and give thanks? I am guessing that some of them were going to be able to return to nicer homes than the Samaritan. I am guessing that some of them were going to be able to return to a nicer village or town than this Samaritan. Some of them were going to be able to return to a better job than this Samaritan. You would think that they would have been the ones that received the biggest benefit. But yet, who came back to give thanks? Only this foreigner. The more we are given, sometimes, the more entitled we become. Isn't that strange? The more that we have, the less we think we should want, right? Because we have everything we need. But often it goes the other way. The more we have, the more entitled we become. The more we have, the more we want things to be just right. And Anthony talked about this last night in the little devotional about how we would like to have things just right. Well, the more we have, the more we want things just right. The less we have, the more we're thankful for what we have, no matter whether it's just right or not. And we will go to great lengths to make it happen. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 2 says, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. How am I stewarding the gifts God has given to me?" I think my gratitude or my lack of gratitude is one way to gauge how faithful I am in stewarding the gifts that God has given to me. And number 9, life lesson number 9, grateful people receive the fullest blessing. It is possible to receive God's great gifts with an unthankful heart. And it happens all around us. God sends gifts to everyone, whether they thank God or not. There are nine men here that received God's gift of healing but did not return to give thanks. However, there was this one that did. And I believe he experienced the blessing of healing, he experienced the blessing of worship, and he experienced the blessing of gratitude. Something that the other nine probably didn't experience. That day there were 10 lepers that were cleansed, is the word the Bible used, physical healing. But there was one that received wholeness. Jesus said, "Thy faith hath made thee whole." And I believe there was more than physical wholeness there. There was spiritual wholeness. There was emotional wholeness. There was wholeness of body, there was wholeness of soul, and there was wholeness of spirit. There was healing in the body as evidenced by the skin that was now clear. There was healing in the soul as evidenced by his gratitude. There was healing in the spirit as evidenced by his worship. He was a whole man. He also received a confirmation and blessing from Jesus that day that the others did not. Jesus said, "Arise, go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole." And that day, he walked away with the realization that his own faith was instrumental in his healing. Yes, Jesus has done the miracle, but it was his faith that made it possible. Jesus said so. Romans 5. We had read a few verses from there already, but I'd like to read verse 1 and verse 2. Just thinking about faith. "Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God." We have access by faith. It is through our faith that we can access Jesus Christ, that we can access salvation, that we can access the grace, that we can access the answer. And it was through this man's faith that he accessed healing that day. "Thy faith hath made thee whole." And I believe as this leper walked away from this experience, he had a new realization of the power of his faith. His faith that day had made him whole. What else could his faith do for him? How else could his faith impact his life? This was not a humanistic, self-help, positive thinking faith that now I can do great things because I have this faith. Although positive thinking is a good thing. We should think positive thoughts, but not that we can do this on our own. It was not that, although his faith brought him healing, it was not faith in himself. It was a faith in God and the realization that God could do great things in his life because of his faith. But you know, he only received that confirmation because he came back and gave thanks. He walked away that day realizing that his faith in God could do great things for him because he came back and gave thanks. And so as we view our lives, as we think about our lives, do we have problems? Yes, we all have problems. We all have problems. Is there a solution? Yes, there's a solution. Have we found the solution? Well, I trust that we have. Have we responded in gratitude and worship and faith? Well, I hope so. Mark chapter 9. Just like to look at one other account of healing. As we think about faith, as we think about belief and unbelief, Mark chapter 9, in this account, the disciples had tried to cast out, there was a child with an evil spirit. The disciples had tried to cast it out and were not able to. And beginning in verse 21, it says, and this is Jesus now, and he asked his father, how long is it ago since this child came unto him? He's talking about the spirit. How long is it ago since this, the evil spirit, came unto him? And he said, of a child. And oft times it hath cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. It was imploring God, imploring Jesus for healing and for a solution. Jesus said unto him, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. If thou canst believe. See, Jesus said, it's back to you. Do you have the faith? I have the solution. I have the answer. I can do this. But do you believe? And the answer of the Father was, in verse 24, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. And that was enough faith for Jesus to do the miracle. And Jesus cast out the evil spirit that day and healed the child. Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. And may we, in life, may we express a faith in God, even if it's small, faith the size of a grain of mustard seed. But just express that faith and allow the faith in God to bring healing, to bring wholeness into our lives, and then respond in gratitude and in worship. Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. Let's kneel for prayer.